Welcome to the Lead Me On podcast, where you will receive practical solutions for extraordinary leadership. I'm your host, Lori King Taylor. For more than 25 years, I've been educating and coaching individuals who want to transform the way they lead. Join me each week for inspiring conversations to help you increase your capability to lead with greater impact and influence. Get ready. It's time to Lead Me On. Hello, and welcome back to the Lead Me On podcast. Today, we're continuing our conversation on high-performance teams in high-stress situations with former United States Air Force test pilot Don Katterback. Let's join in now.
Going back to something you said earlier, you're in some strategic stuff right now, trying to figure out how to get the aircraft that you guys are working on now to work, and asking a lot of questions and doing a lot of strategy. I'd love for you to kind of walk us through a little bit of that. I'm a big advocate on asking the whys and digging down, but also asking the hows. And sometimes that can come across as crass. How are you going to do that? How are you going to make sure that
like you're challenging on them?
You're challenging them. How do you guys handle that when you're in those deep planning meetings?
You hit the key, the corporate culture. What kind of culture have you established? And one of the interesting things about corporate culture is I've been in a lot of different companies. They will publish their tenets or their culture. And then you find out it's nothing like that because the culture is dependent on the people. And it starts at the leadership at the top. And that leadership has got to find ways of inculcating what they want that culture to be. And again, walk the walk, talk the talk. But it all comes back to that trust and healthy conflict. Now, see how quickly we came back to that, Lori, is you're not going to have those tough conversations. Why'd you do that? Or how'd you do that? Or what were you thinking? Which is the healthy conflict. It's pulling those questions. That is the healthy conflict. And if you haven't established that culture, then you're going to get those looks like, what? And why is he challenging me all the time? And it's not until they realize that you're not challenging them. You're asking the questions that's good for the team. And at that point, the high-performing team's gone up a level where they recognize that's healthy conflict and that you have to have that. So, again, the techniques, you start from day one building trust, and you demonstrate why and how asking those questions leads to either quicker solution, a better solution, a more fiscal responsible solution. And if you get on the wrong track, then you have to be confident enough in your ability and your team to change directions and not be afraid of that. So that's another important thing for high performance team is getting buy-in. There's been a kind of a battle, two camps, consensus or buy-in, right? Which is more important? A lot of people give you the head nod and they'll give you consensus. I don't want that. I want buy-in. I want whether you like me or you like the idea or not, or you don't even think this is the direction we can. That doesn't matter. When the team leaves that room, everybody needs to be aligned and going in that direction. And one of the best techniques that I've got for that is we'll change direction. As you got to hang with me. What we have right now is not working. We clearly have to make a change. Does everybody agree with that? Yes. I'm going to give you a way that we can go, or we as a team will work with that new way of going. But when we leave this room, give them a time period to enact or execute on that. And if it doesn't work, we will reevaluate. And what that time frame is, I don't know. It really depends on, the importance of the decision and how quickly, if we fail in that decision, we need to re-vector, right? But I put it right in the Outlook meeting right now. Here, I'm putting it in. 6 months from today, we will reevaluate that, and you invite everybody on the meeting. That way they can't say, well, I'm not sure he's serious about reinvestigating this. And I've had those for a year where I've had an Outlook calendar. And it comes up the day before, it pops up tomorrow. You're supposed to reevaluate that decision you made a year ago. And we do. And it works.
I love that. So then they have to trust that you're going to do that. But saying, okay, we're going this way. Not everybody agrees that this is the direction we go, but we're going to give it a certain amount of time and reevaluate. And they can go back to their teams and say, okay, I know what this wasn't what we as our organization thought was the best, but we're going to get on board.
So one of the techniques that leaders think is a good thing to do is a decision's made at the executive level and they'll go back to their team and go, I didn't agree with it, but we got to do what they told us to do. So what they don't realize is they just destroyed their credibility. Not only did they undermine the leadership that they work for and they work with, who trusted them to go back to their team. But they also now have a doubt in the back of the mind of everybody they just talked to. Well, if he's doing that to the executive who's running this company, he's got to be doing it to us too. So you undermine your credibility when you do that. And I've seen a lot of leaders do that with their team. I saw a lot of it in the military as well, but it's not the way to go. You can tell them, hey, you know, Don, would you have gone that direction? I go, no, I would not have gone that direction. Here's what I probably would have done, but that's not important. You know what Don's going to do? He's going to go and execute the best he can. I've got to give this decision a chance to work. And that sometimes it's hard to do that, especially when you're really struggling with how you think that's going to work, but you got to do it.
So when you go back to your team like that, your team also isn't bought into what you're doing. If you don't believe in it, they don't believe in it.
That's right.
Could be a little bit of sabotage in it to ensure that it doesn't go right.
So what I do is I go to my supervisors and I ask them, okay, if you don't think this is the way to go, what could we do? What could we do to align as closely as possible? And then see if there's little tweaks you can do to that to fully align the group and ask them, hey, I'm just asking you to give that extra 10% in this direction. Can we try it for a while? And I tell you what, he said we'd come back, or she said we'd come back in 6 weeks and reevaluate. Why don't we put a mark on our calendar for 3 weeks and then give them some feedback? That way, maybe they won't wait for the 6 weeks. But I challenge them. But if we find out in 3 weeks this is doing really well, I want you guys and gals to stand up and say, hey, we were wrong. And this is great. And here's how we can make it better. And that's the contract that you need to have at every layer within the organization to truly be a high-performing team.
Let me jump on that one. You said they need to be willing to come back and say, hey, we were wrong. Talk to me about the leader being willing to say, hey, we were wrong, or the leader being able to go back to their team and apologize to their team if something goes awry. Do you believe in that?
I do. Wholeheartedly, you have to apologize. One of the leadership buzzwords just to hear, I would say in the last few years, is vulnerability being one of the biggest factors in being a good leader, right? It's the truth. Show your human side. Everybody's human. Everybody makes mistakes. But if you're always trying to hide the mistakes, the people are not stupid. The people that you're leading, you've been put in charge of, that you've been entrusted to your care, they're smart. They're going to figure it out. And if you're not willing to say, hey, I was wrong, it shows an aspect of your character and your personality that is not someone they want to lead, or that they want leading them. So a lot of folks think it hurts them to apologize or to be vulnerable, but it's exactly the opposite. Folks are looking for that human leader. They need it. They need boundaries, and they need to know that you're fighting for them, and they need to know you're empathetic, and they need to know you're vulnerable. You have to apologize. If you know you're wrong and you know you should apologize and you don't, the longer you wait, the worse it gets. You're just chipping away at your credibility and you're chipping away at that trust you built.
So what advice would you give someone who has a real difficult time with showing vulnerability? They've always been told leaders never show their weakness. They never show vulnerability. How would they begin to override some of that talk that they have going on in their heads and learn to be more vulnerable when it's not something that comes natural to them?
I think the only thing I can suggest is you've got to try it a couple times and look at the value that you get out of it. And don't be quick to judge, because sometimes if you've been in that mode for a long time, folks aren't naturally going to accept that at the beginning, because they're going to go like, what's his angle? He went from being this hard stoic leader and barking out orders to being empathetic and vulnerable the next day. People aren't going to buy that. I will say that if you are that person trying to make that, it's one of the hardest things you'll ever try to do. I'm not going to say it's easy. It is a gradual process. It is the hardest thing internally to turn around, but you got to give it a try. First off, you got to convince yourself it's the right way to go, because if you don't, you're not going to stick with it. And then two, it's going to take some time. So you've got to be ready to accept some failures and some setbacks, maybe even.
Yeah, I like that you said they have to buy in, right? That it is the right thing to do. They just can't do it because somebody told them to do it.
And that's the thing. It's honesty. You actually have to be that and know that that is right within you. You can't fake that. You can't fake your true self, not the one you're trying to project. It has to be you. You have to believe in it.
So let's talk about some high stress situations that you have dealt with in the past that really stand out to you. And how did you deal with them?
Well, first off, you've got to understand why you're doing some of the high stress or high risk missions. You know, if the payoff isn't there, you don't have an altruistic reason for doing it like we did in the military. And it was about protecting the country. It was about family and God and country. Corny as that may sound, it's the truth. So there's got to be higher ideals in those type of situations, military. And fighter operations is intrinsically tough and high stress. I wouldn't say it's inherently dangerous. And I've heard this quote a lot and I like it. Fighter ops like rocket science and launching things to orbit, it's not inherently dangerous, but it's unforgiving in that there are certain things that you must focus on and not make a mistake, that you have to be flawless in your execution. And you'll never, ever, ever be truly flawless. But that is what the fighter pilots, the air crew that are flying these very expensive, fast airplanes are always trying to get to. And that's flawless execution again. And you get there by breaking it down into its constituent parts and hopefully focusing on that one part. So it becomes natural. It's not something you have to think about. And you try to take as much of that thinking out of it. Again, to quote Maverick,
you can overthink things.
Yeah, you can overthink things. A lot of us do that. We overanalyze or overthink, but sometimes it's you just got to move out and do it.
In a company's mission statement too. So starting with your mission, what is it that you're there to do?
That is correct. So find out what you're there to do. Come up with a strategic plan and doing it the best you can. Break it down into the smallest parts you can that you can compartmentalize and you can train to. You can train so well that you make it look easy. So you've got to find certain techniques. And what you try to do is establish some standards to what you train to where it's second nature. That's probably one of the better ways of dealing with things that are inherently kind of stressful. It's just to become natural. And get so good at them that they're no longer stressful. I mean, even with the first time you tried to drive a car, right? That was a little stressful, but you practiced and practiced and practiced and you got good at it to where it becomes second nature. And you're just taking that to a different level. Not everybody can do that. So you also have to look at your teammates and make sure that they are up for the mission and continually coach in. If they're not, you've got to remove them from the situation because there's nothing worse in a high stress situation. Everybody trusts each other except one person, and that one person can destroy the mission.
Take us back to that high stress standout situation for you. What was it? Because you know I'm not letting you go until I hear something really cool.
No, you're not. Some of them were individual test missions. You've got to go out and you've got to put an aircraft through its paces that you know it's a medium risk or a high risk mission. You've got a set of cards and those cards are what help you break down the little pieces. And I can tell you there have been many times I've been at red flag where, you know, you're cresting a ridge line and you're going in to prosecute a target and something unexpected happens. You meet an airplane face to face that you miss by, you know, mere inches. If that won't rattle you, nothing will. When you just see your light flash before your eyes and then 20 seconds, you're over target. You have to bullseye the target. You try to compartmentalize, like push things aside. That was a high stress situation, got the adrenaline up because my next mission is to put laser on the target. You saw that demonstrated in Top Gun. In ingressing the target, first off, the carrier shot's tough. Now you got to ingress to the target area. Now you got to go through the canyon. Now you got to pull 9 Gs and do a ridge crossing, come over the top. Now, after all of that athletic event that you just went through, now you got to focus on putting that laser on target, right? So that's probably some of the more stressful situations because there's no time, there's no redos. It's got to be right the first time. And that's why you train hard and you put a lot of pressure on yourself. And there's a lot of pressure within the cockpit and again, within the flight. And that's probably the most stressful situation is where you don't have time to sit and replan. You have got to come up with the solution very quickly and perform to a high degree, even after just getting scared, even after getting almost shot down, after almost hitting another airplane. And you're hoping your training will kick in and what you planned that last minute target run, that 30 seconds from initial point to target, you've done everything to prepare and you got to put all that other stuff aside. And now it's that last 30 seconds that'll make or break you.
How do you train yourself to be able to do that? Because I know a lot of times when you get that adrenaline rush and all those chemicals start pouring down, they're not dripping at that point, they are pouring down. How do you immediately be able to make that shift?
I think it comes with training. Most military services have a good way of helping you push that aside. They put you in high stress situations so you know what it feels like. a training we go through for hypoxia where we reduce the outside pressure. The oxygen getting to your system is not what it needs to be. It's not what we're breathing right now. And when that happens, it's like getting drunk. Everybody has a different experience with that. And if you've never experienced it, you don't know what's going on. I think stress is like that. You need to experience it a few times before you're in that situation where the stakes are extremely high so that you know what it feels like and you go, hey, I've been here before. And the best way to handle it is to let everything that from this point go. It's got to be put behind me. I've got to focus on what's ahead. I think that's a key in corporate world too. You've got to be in some high stress situations to where you know what it feels like. You know what it's like to make decisions in those situations.
And that was my question for you was going to be, you've moved now from military to corporate. You're not in that plane anymore, facing another plane, life, death. How do you look at that and what you learn there? And we do have high stress situations in business, but probably not at the same level.
That's right.
But still need to be able to experience and become accustomed. I call it failing forward, learning enough about. So how have you been able to bring that into corporate life and what does that look like?
You always got to look at what the outcome is and you've got to let the team fail gracefully sometimes. It's not necessarily what I would have done, but it doesn't help the team if every time you see them about to fail or make a mistake, you stop it. You've got to let them fail so that later on they will see it again. They know what it looks like. They know what it feels like. And they'll avoid it on their own. They've got to be put into those either high stress situations or those high risk situations. And so you've always got to be as a leader judging, can I allow this person to make an error? And you know, the funny thing is, it's your perspective. It may be that it is the best thing in the world and you're just not seeing it. Putting them in a situation and letting them fail gracefully sometimes is the best way to make a high performing team. They'll learn from it and others will learn on the team and they will see that you lived up to your word. You empowered them. You let them go do it and it'll make the team stronger.
Love that. As we wrap up today, anything I didn't ask that you think would be really important for us to talk about, what would your advice to those leaders who are dealing with high performance teams in high stress situations?
As leaders, we've got to have the highest of integrity. If you lose your credibility, if you lose your trust, if you lie, if you cheat, if you steal, if you tolerate those who do, it will not produce a high performing team for the long term. And we talk about trust and healthy conflict being the foundation. I can't tell you how many leaders will go directly to accountability and results. They'll never build the trust. And folks go, see, I got results. I'm like, yeah, you did. But also I would contend that you will not have that team around in 6 months to a year and they will go and you'll have turnover and you won't have continuity. I've been in companies where there was a 6 months problems that we thought we had solved rear their ugly head again with hardware. And you're thinking, well, how did that happen? We solved that 6 months ago. Well, it's because those people turned over. The tribal knowledge is no longer there and you have to relearn the mistakes and the time cycle 6 months. And in 6 months again, you'll discover the problem again, unless you stick to the foundations, you build the trust, and those people stick around to provide the continuity. I've seen a lot of leaders do that. I got results, and yeah, they've got their promotion, and they're out the door. Was it right for the company? No, it was not.
You know, I talk in my training a lot about that trust being the foundation. And if you're building a house, it can have a pretty questionable foundation for a little while. But if anything comes at it, high winds, floods, anything that can rock the house just a little bit, that foundation will crumble. And when it does, it all comes piling down.
It's the truth. It's a very simple metaphor, but it is. So one parting thought, Lori, that has kind of plagued me through my career, and it's something I did early on when I was Lieutenant Captain Ketterbeck, is when we had a crisis, I had not yet learned to not take the first person or the first set of information as gospel to what the crisis was or the problem. And I've learned over the years that you can't get emotional about it. You can form your own opinions very quickly, but you better step back and go get additional opinions, get witnesses, find out, really dig deep down into it. Because 9 out of 10 times, the first person that comes to you and tells you what happened and what the problem was and who needs to be punished or what action you need to take is usually wrong. And it may even be more than 9 out of 10 times. So I think with maturity and learning your people, you can take a step back and keep the emotion out of it. Go find out what happened, because chances are it's going to keep you from having to apologize later.
Yeah, I like that. So I have a client that they do what are called autopsies when they have an issue. When you think about autopsies, you really think about getting down to the true cause, not the symptom. So.
Yep. And that's usually what an aftermath is. You see the aftermath and you can make a lot of judgment calls or come to conclusions that are untrue. And it's usually something that's not as serious as you normally thought it was, but you definitely don't want to take actions and treat the symptoms, right? You want to go to the cause, the root cause. And some of the companies that, you know, I've worked for that have done that very well, were companies like Hermes that I'm working for now and SpaceX. There was, when something went wrong, if you didn't find the root cause, it was going to pop up again and you couldn't afford to let it pop up again. It needed to be solved and it needed to be taken out of the hardware or out of the process.
Yeah, because if you don't get to the root of it, if you think about health, if you're just treating the symptoms and you don't get to the root of what's causing it, it will eventually eat away.
And it'll cause you more problems in the future. And if you ever find yourself in that situation, made a judgment call, snap decision or whatever, you got to have that integrity. You've got to back out and go, you know what? I was wrong. I apologize. I jumped to conclusions and people will respect that. You know, I'm not saying go do that on purpose so you can get that extra respect when you have to apologize, but you better get on it. Bad news does not get better with age. And when you've made a mistake, folks are waiting for you. They're always watching you as a leader and you better have the highest integrity and go fix it.
Well, I loved having you on today, Don, but I cannot leave the podcast without asking you to tell our audience, what is your code name? You know, we talked about Top Gun a couple of times throughout this, and they all had their cool little names. What was your cool name as a pilot?
Well, first off, they're not always cool. I'll tell you that. I've had some of the strangest nicknames come with my fighter squadron. I had a group of folks, because of a particular incident, nicknamed me Crash many years ago. Now, did not involve the airplane behind you, and it didn't involve the F-4 that I flew at first. Let's just say it involved a temporary duty station and a car and a pretty girl, and we'll just leave it at that, okay?
Oh, we got to dig deeper. A car. You know, like I said at the beginning, I've known you for years and years. And when I was first introduced to you and was told we called you Crash and knew you were a fighter pilot and a test pilot. And I was like, oh, that just didn't seem to go together. But here you are, still with us.
They don't go together. And I have not crashed an airplane. Let's just put it that way. It's an attitude towards life. Or it was back then.
So I'll buy you a beer and I'll hear more about the girl in the car.
Deal.
All right. So the practical solutions for extraordinary leadership that our guests brought to us today were, first of all, trust and healthy conflicts are key to a high performance team. You must be willing to make mistakes and allow your people to make mistakes. And you must know who you are and know your people. And as a leader, always have the highest level of integrity. Thank you again, Don. We are so grateful for your time with us today.
I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, Lori. We'll see you at the bar over that beer, and we'll talk about pretty girls and nicknames.
All right. Until then. Right.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, I would so appreciate a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe so you won't miss a single episode. If you're interested in knowing more about upcoming events or working with me personally to transform the way you lead, visit my website at trinityperformancesolutions.com. Until next week.